Welcome to the Ghost Rap Podcast. It's fast, it's fun, it's informative. This is your weekly dose of the news that matters on the markets with your host, the Finance Ghost. For more details on these stories and to make sure you get daily updates, visit ghostmail.co.za. The Ghost Rap Podcast is proudly brought to you by Mazars, a leading international audit, tax, and advisory firm with a national footprint within South Africa. Let's start with Transaction Capital, the company that has literally dominated the headlines for the past week and just cannot be ignored here in Ghost Rap either. Now, my take on this is that the clickbaity publications that kept making the reference in the past week to the We Buy Cars owner and its tanking share price actually gave a pretty misleading take on why the share price has collapsed. I thought that We Buy Cars did rather well, to be honest, because they cannot be expected to keep growing at such high rates off that pandemic base. The troubles here are in SA Taxi, a clever and vertically integrated business that is actually just a victim of its own specialization. Now, this brings me to the point that I actually want to make here, which is around concentration in a business and a portfolio. Specializing and being in the right industry at the right time is undoubtedly the way to make really great returns. There's no denying that. But that requires you to have the right industry at the right time and to successfully specialize. Likewise, having a large position in a portfolio that works really well for you makes you look like an investing hero, but if it was that easy, we would all be rich. You see, if something goes wrong in that industry, especially outside of your control, like what has happened at SA Taxi, then a wonderful business in a suffering industry still does badly. It's hard to avoid randomness in business cycles. In fact, I don't think it can be avoided at all, which is why I do avoid having highly concentrated positions in my portfolio. Yes, Transaction Capital really stunned, and I did manage to blunt some of the pain by punting on Friday morning and enjoying that one-day rally, although by the time you listen to this, anything else is possible with that share price. But Transaction Capital is less than 3% of my portfolio, and my strategy of having many smaller positions that I like has paid off here. Watching a large position drop 70% just because of external factors or a nasty surprise is really not a fun experience. With that rough start out of the way, let's jump into some much happier news now, and that is around Sun International, a business that is doing so much better at the moment, and not just thanks to a recovery in tourism, but also thanks to our desire to get out there and just have fun locally after the pandemic. Sun International is doing well across the board, with EBITDA margin in the urban casino segment running ahead of 2019 levels. Load shedding has caused some margin pressure in other parts of the business, like in Sun Slots, but the overall story is one of margin expansion versus pre-pandemic levels and a pretty useful reduction of debt in the latest period as well. The share price is up around 44% in the past year and is trading at around its 52-week high, so be careful of chasing this one. But with an 8.5% trailing dividend yield and a business that is certainly capable of growth, I can also understand why there are buyers in the market for the company even at this valuation now. There is a lot of activity in the gold sector at the moment, with a mega rally in March for the gold miners that skillful traders hopefully managed to get on the right side of. Having held gold miners for quite some time until recently exiting after a rally at the start of this year, I've concluded that the only way to make money on gold miners is by trading them rather than investing in them. Other than a banking crisis which is now driving the gold price, the other major news in the sector is AngloGold and Gold Fields putting together a deal to create the largest gold mine in Africa. It will be in Ghana, with the companies contributing existing gold investments in that country to a joint venture, in which Gold Fields will hold two-thirds of it and AngloGold and the other third. There is still the shareholding of the Ghanaian government to figure out, and I can't quite see them just rolling over and not moving up into the joint venture. With an all-in sustaining cost of below $1,000 per ounce for the first 5 years, and an estimated $1,200 per ounce for the remaining estimated life of 18 years, there is money to be made here at anything close to the current gold prices. There is a solid recovery underway in the retail property sector. A trip to your local mall will confirm that for you. I actually made those trips to Canal Walk around the time of investing in High Prop just to gauge the level of footfall in the mall. A few conversations with shop owners helped too and convinced me to invest. The results of High Prop have certainly supported what I was hearing on the ground and seeing myself, with distributable income per share up by a lovely 30%. However, this has not landed in the share price, which is almost at a 52-week low. There's no interim dividend because of concerns around energy costs in South Africa, and that must be the driver of the latest share price disappointment. But a full-year dividend is almost a certainty, so I'm actually seriously considering adding to my position at these levels, especially as load shedding seems to be a bit lower, although whether or not that will last is truly anyone's guess. SabVest Capital has done a great job of reminding us what an investment company can actually achieve. A 17% compound annual growth rate in net asset value over the past 15 years is seriously impressive. Like everyone, they are not immune to mistakes, with a transaction capital position catching them out recently, them and so many others. But I can't help but admire the management team here when they say things like the company is fully invested. In other words, they are not chasing new deals in this environment, but they will be focusing on the companies that they already have in the portfolio and supporting them where they can. A 38% climb in the share price in the past year tells you that the discount to the net asset value, or NAV, has narrowed, because the NAV per share only increased by 17.6% in the past year. Buying investment holding companies when the discount has really opened up is a fun strategy, but be warned that these discounts can be stubborn and sometimes they don't close back to their historical levels. A long-term chart of SabVest shows us that the NAV growth has actually been more than enough of a driver of shareholder returns anyway. The release of detailed earnings by Stadio was cause for reflection in the market, and also for myself in the way I originally interpreted the trading update. You see, when that update came out before this detailed release, the market had a big wobbly over student growth, which was slower in the second semester than the first semester. But in the detailed reporting, there was an analysis of semester 1 versus semester 2 historically, and it shows that the second half of the year has historically been a slower growth semester. So reading too much into the momentum within a given year can actually be unnecessarily bearish. I'll tell you what's not bearish is HEPS growth of 18% and a massive jump in the dividend payout ratio, now at 44.5% of HEPS in this period. For a growth stock, that is a very helpful underpin for the investment thesis. The relatively asset-light structure is shining through here. For a bit of variety, I've made space this week to deal with earnings from Caxton. Trading under the ticker CAT, or CAT, this is in honor of the latest addition to my household, a kitten named Raskas. If you're a Formula One fan, you'll get that reference, and if not, Google the Monaco racetrack. Speaking of cattiness, some of Caxton's prior SENS announcements were pretty much on a par with two cats fighting in an alley late at night, as the company went way overboard in its approach to the battle with the Impact board. After Caxton earned itself some egg on its face with the regulators for that approach, the lawyers have clearly taken back the pen on these announcements, and that's not a bad thing. Caxton should just focus on its own business, which is actually doing really well. HEPS for the 6 months to December increased by 36.4%. Pricing power was really important here, because costs were up by 15.3% even with once-offs removed. But thankfully, revenue was up 25.8%, and there was volume growth included in that as well. The outlook is unfortunately less exciting, with inflation and load shedding expected to bite in the second half of the financial year. And as for Impact, the announcement acknowledges that Impact's latest numbers have actually been very good, but the level of debt remains a concern here for Caxton as a major investor in Impact. Like a dog with a bone, Caxton also couldn't resist mentioning its concerns with aspects of the corporate governance at Impact. And finally, the outlook for Baldwin. Honestly, it's not pretty for this property developer. The company has a number of initiatives in place to try and prop up volumes, including an extraordinary paragraph in the latest announcement that says they have pushed some sales out to the next financial year to support volumes in that year. I don't think I've ever seen a management team actually essentially admit to trying to smooth out volumes. I've genuinely never seen this. Weirdness aside, you can imagine why the property market is under pressure. Interest rates are up, consumer confidence is down, and that's a dangerous cocktail for Baldwin as it tries to sell many, many, many apartments in a given year. This is why the stock is trading on such a low earnings multiple. The forward multiple, i.e. based on next year's earnings, is actually the one that counts. The trailing multiple, that's based on last year's earnings. And it doesn't tell you too much about what could happen. With such a bearish outlook in the narrative, along with some other strange stuff as mentioned, the market is not a big fan of Baldwin. And that's a wrap. Remember, nothing you hear on the Ghost Rap podcast should be taken as advice. Please do your own research.